I've done it often enough, but I should not be surprised anymore at what I discover when I do it. But it happened again this year, it being meeting the class for the first time. And what always strikes me, and even after 2 weeks of class, or a week and a half of class, the territory was fairly well mapped. Namely, this intense kind of individualism among the students. My opinion, my judgment. And there's a terrible fear that they're going to be encroached upon by somebody else, or some other idea. Now, I've been doing this long enough to know that adolescence is the time when that individualism becomes most ferocious and most fragile. Already in the class had suggested about decide what you want to do. And as soon as you offer them freedom, they can't. They don't know what to do. They're scared witless. But freedom, of course, is the very locus of the individual. Now, people have been inveighing against particularly Western individualism for a long time, so another brand is not going to be helpful. But I think in the light of these readings, it might be useful to think about it again. Far better thinkers and writers and speakers than I have noted how pervasive individualism is in the West. Whether it's the titanic self-creation of Friedrich Nietzsche, or the more humdrum form of, if everybody would just leave me alone, then we'd be all right. Everybody just mind their own business, and we'd all be on time. In other words, the primal word seems to be I. And of course, that's the great noisy proclamation of every 2-year-old who discovers the word no. Basically, say I. That's what the no means. That is worked out over and over and over again at different levels, at different points in our life. Adolescence, as I said, being the most ferocious form of it. What reminded me of all this is the reading last Sunday and this Sunday, which continue the same thing, the great mark and theme of the centrality of Jesus' death. Remember that brawl Jesus had with Peter. And get behind me, Satan, when he suggested, after identifying Jesus as a messianic figure, and Jesus immediately says, and I'm going to get killed. This is Mark's, obviously, reconstruction, the creation there. Then Peter gets all upset. No. And then Jesus retakes the past. The centrality of the cross. And as I said last week, and we haven't done, I think, by far, a very good job of making sense of that. But I think by looking at the profound and pervasive individualism of our sensitivities, sensibilities of the way of thinking in the West, we might be able to make sense of that. And I'd like to make a proposal that the cross is simply the consequence of moving from I as the primal word to we as the primal word. The primal foundation. I mean, biologically, as us, you have father and mother having sexual intercourse. You have mother and child for 9 months living. But then after that, the struggle seems to be to continually mark out over and over again in one context or another one's own church. And you get 3 very interesting strategies for doing that, or a reason why that happened. In the passage from Wisdom, we have the picture of a truly truly fine human being, exciting all kinds of jealousy. Showing up our own mediocrity. And so the I is offended by that. And the response, of course, is violence. And in this passage from James, envy, ambition, wickedness of every kind. What are you talking about? Conflicts and disputes among you. Where do they come from? They're not from the craving that are at war within you. You want something, you don't have it. Again, these are reflexes, protective reflexes to salvage and maintain the I, the independent I. Now, in the face of it, that primal I doesn't make a lot of sense because our lives are constantly intersecting with each other. But often enough, the nature of the intersection strikes me as akin to billiard balls hitting each other on a table, and we bounce into each other, or bounce off each other. But the intersection does not have much more to do than that. And I think the remarkable thing about Jesus is that he somehow grew far more gracefully into a profound and pervasive awareness of the primal word being. And that is incompatible with the word, not only the word, which is his mind, but our own mind as well. To really have that as the foundational act of consciousness, is primal me. And to live out of that, bound to excite us. Competition, great law competition, I think. University and academics do it in a more sophisticated way, but I don't know any brawls as vicious that I've seen between academics going at each other. Universities use bigger words. So, where does the pain come? Pain comes from constantly reflecting on these reflexes of jealousy, of competition, of envy, of one another and the other. Recognizing that is painful. Transcending it is even more painful, and in fact, impossible. That's what we call grace. Grace is the dynamic of the primal we. It is God with me. It is God with me, transforming me, opening me, connecting me to the other and never to mind. It exalts me to God. But it is a cruciform process. What?